Hello, Charlie. You can guess where I am. Just off on another adventure with my son. I just wanted to say, I'm not that happy with Bobbyguard Stories suggesting there's something wrong with my car, sort of technical or otherwise. And I just wanted him to just have a little listen to the engine. And I think he'll, I think he'll be eating his words. Beautiful. 1 litre. 1 horsepower, I'm guessing. As new. As she came off the production line 19 years ago. So I think I'd like to give him a lift at some point, just so he can experience it for himself. He would need to maybe fold himself up a little bit just to get inside it, because I think, really, if you're above 5'7", you have to sort of bend your neck a little bit, but that's alright. It'll be worth it. He'll have a great time, and then, you can see for himself what a fantastic machine this is.
This is a podcast. We talk about running. We talk about other things too. So please come and join us. We hope you'll enjoy this. This is On the Back Foot.
Hello, On the Back Foot listeners, and welcome to the Lad's Leap Review.
Oh, I packed my lunchbox. What's in yours? Tell me what you like or don't like.
When you're munching on the bus!
You know what they say. If you've got nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all. So yeah, Lad's Leap. Let's not talk about that. Well, actually, no, I've got a couple of nice things to say. Well organised in terms of, I liked the sort of, it was like pizza van at the end and place to get a pint and all that. It was quite fun for a champs race. And also the fact that, short race, nice weather, we didn't have to carry any kit. And I thought that was a great decision. Well done, Des. So, yeah, there's the positives. The less said about the route and also my performance, the better. I was in a slightly spiteful mood by the end of it, I would say. So I've left this until the day after to give my report. But, munching. Let's talk about food. What's not like about food? Having gone in strong on the first champs race with a selection of snacks, had a peanut butter and Marmite bagel, which I ate probably about 5 minutes before the race. Ill-advised, but it was all right. Packet of Space Invaders, that went down well. And I also had some Jelly Babies. I brought with me a Dip Dab, didn't eat that. And also a can of Maxton's Stout, didn't have that. Maybe for the best. And you know what they say, reinvent the wheel as much as you possibly can. So for the second champs race, totally different strategy. It was sort of birthday themed snacks for that one. Had a little tub of Tartiflette, which Rose had made me the night before, which was great. I think that's probably good running food in the sense that you've got carbs in there, but the potatoes, you've got fat, you've got protein in the cheese, like enough cheese to drown a man, as it should be, in Tartiflette. So I had some of that before the race, and that was good. And I also had a tub of leftover icing from the cake she made, Biscoff-themed cake, delicious. And there was quite a lot of icing left over, so I just rammed some of that in a tub and brought that along. And I thought that's going to give me the fuel I need to go and tackle some really crap peat bogs. In the end, I forgot to have any of it, but Chris Albrough, to the rescue, he fished in his bum bag there at the start of the race and said, here you go, pass me his own little cube of icing that he'd made earlier. And I like to think that he had spiked it, and the fact that I ate that right before the race is the reason that I had such a terrible race. So, thanks, Chris. You ruined my day. And I will hold it against you forever. That's munching this week. That's Lad's Leap. Bring on the Lakes races. Bring on the Lakes Champs races. That's what I can say. None of this Peak District nonsense. All right. Have a good one. Bye.
And there he is, a snobby guard story, man of the lakes, picking on our lovely Peak District and its beautiful peat bogs. So, Bobby is an incredible chap. Happy birthday for last weekend. And thank you for not just being a star of this podcast, but also being a star of Spud Life. Now, Bobby shared with me that we were chatting and he told me he'd been out that weekend to be on a podcast called Spud Life. And I had a listen and it was brilliant. We had Bobby talking about fell running for the first 15 minutes. It was Bobby in serious mode. He did a very nice overview of what fell running is to the presenter of Spud Life, who from the photo looks a bit of a legend, and Tatty Tim, he calls himself. I think he's got a jacket potato van, and that's how him and Bobby know each other. I'm assuming Bobby enjoys a spud. Seems like a really nice guy. It was an enjoyable podcast, and I would recommend listening to Bobby on there. Bobby also talks a bit about his dry stone walling on it, and in my arsenal, in my back catalogue of wandering WhatsApp voice notes, I do have some bits that, yeah, some ponderings of Bobby on walls that I'm going to share with you over the next few weeks, because dry stone walls are one of those things that we notice when we're out running, and I think it's interesting to know a bit more about them. If there is a someone who, you know, has some real knowledge on the landscape that we run upon and how we should look after it. I've been noticing people recently hiding their dog poos in plastic bags in the roots of trees in Padley Gorge. So that's nice, isn't it? That's a really lovely way to look after your environment. So none of that shit, pardon my French. If there are people out there who would like to come on and talk about other things too, but please, you know, if you can have the faintest link to fell running, it's really appreciated. So Spud Life with Bobby Guard's story, available from all good podcast venues. I also heard Harry Bolton interviewed on a podcast called Stud Marks, which again was very nicely done, well produced, that bonus episode with Harry. It was a nice interview. The guy didn't get him on with his best mate to take the mick out of him. He let Harry talk, let us hear about Harry, how he broke into designing shoes. And they talked a lot about the new Ron Hills, which I'm hoping to get my hands on a pair before my Bob Graham. So, yeah, that's in other news kind of thing. We'll go on to have a bit of a roundup of Lad's Leap, but first we're going to hear from Jacob Tonkin.
Everyone's talking at us, and I can't hear a word they're saying. Only echoes on my mind. Folk stop and go. I can't see mush. Only shadows of their eyes. Tossing it down. Tossing, another word for raining. How's it going, Charles? Going away yonder to find myself a very loud duking spot. Which means I'm going over there to find a nice place to swim. Charles, I did not know that there was a Facebook group, and the reason that you keep referring to me in that group as I cannot be tagged Jacob Tonkin is that you and I weren't, and at the time of recording this, and, but I've sent you a request, but we're not friends on Facebook yet. So that's why. In regards to the recent poll about what Liam Gard's story did to me, I'll probably give my views on what happened from my point of view, and then we'll see what Liam's Bobby says. Did everyone know that Bobby's real name is Liam, by the way? Is that breaking news in the podcast? But I finished the race and it was very hot, and I collapsed in a bit of a heap, and I took my vest off because as I was running up Barra, I was thinking of maybe taking my vest off. But the Keswick vests, the inside like cheese graters on my nipples, and I have to take my nipples up before a race. So I was over by the water troughs having a little slurp of juice, and Bobby came up to me really excited, and I thought, oh, he's coming over to check if I had a nice race. And he just leant forward with his giant dry stone walling hands and very delicately tore off the tape off my left nipple in front of about 12 people. And then he tried to do the other one, but the other one was fused onto my chest hair, so he couldn't get it off. And then he scrumpled it up and he just passed it back to me and walked off. And I don't remember talking to him again for the rest of the day.
Absolute bombshell. I mean, who? Liam Gard's story?
Of course, I say nipple and I mean udder, because that's how big my nipples are. Today's Cumbrian lesson, I'm joined by a non-native speaker, but someone who lives in this fine county. So I am joined today by Rachel May. Say hello.
Hello.
Rachel May, where are you from?
Well, I'm from in between Sunderland and Durham, in a little town called Houghtonley Spring.
Houghtonley Spring, you say? So, I'm frequently told that I can't pronounce Houghtonley Spring.
Houghton. You did well there, to be fair.
Houghton.
Houghton.
Houghtonley Spring. Houghtonley Spring. Say it in a thicker accent as you can.
Houghtonley Spring.
So, Rachel May, where do you live now, Rachel May? And how long have you lived in that place?
In Thirlmere.
Oh, whereabouts?
Whereabouts in Thelmere?
Yeah.
Next to the Institute.
Oh, next to the Institute. Funny, I live there as well. So, Rachel May moved here nearly 4 years ago.
4 years ago this year.
And when you first met Chris the farmer, who lives just up around the corner, what did you think?
He's a nice man, but I couldn't understand very much of what he was saying.
Just couldn't understand a word. So if I was in the house and I was looking out the window, I'd see Rachel often being stopped by Chris and just stood there nodding and not understanding the word that he was saying. So I decided, this is well before my regular slot on the podcast, that I would teach Rachel May here how to speak Cumbrian. So you're doing fairly well in what you have picked up. But there's one bit which you always struggle to say. So similar to I struggle saying Houghtonley Spring, Rachel May struggles to say Hoost Fettle, as in how are you doing. So I'll say it again and then Rachel will have a go. Hoost Fettle.
Hoost Fettle.
So she does slightly sound Chinese when she says it though.
Hoost.
Host.
Host.
Host. Fettle. Host. Fettle.
Host. Host. Fettle.
Oh.
I can't do it.
But you do start to use Lal and Yan.
Sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes does, yes. But yeah, so that is a good attempt.
So I asked Jacob Tonkin, who is Rachel May? Is she his lodger? Is she his girlfriend? His fiance, his wife. I mean, you've just found out we're only friends on Facebook now that, you know, the episode's out. So just assumed I knew who Rachel May was. And doesn't she sound delightful? Yeah. it turns out that, well, here we go.
In response to your question as to who Rachel May is, Childs, she is actually the luckiest person in the world, in that on a tri-hourly basis, she gets to listen to possibly one of the greatest voices in the history of mankind.
Some may say he is the songbird of our generation.
Well, I couldn't have put it any better myself. It's almost as if I have told her to say that, but I didn't actually. She came up out with that with her own free will, didn't you? Didn't you?
Yeah.
Yes, no, Rachel May lives in my house with me. She is a female who I spend time with every now and then. I will start a poll. Who is this? Who is this woman? And what is she doing with our Jacob? And why can't she speak in a Cumbrian accent yet? But I said to her, oh, would you mind being on the podcast and speaking some Cumbrian? She said, only if I would speak in a really strong northeast accent, which I haven't been able to do. You know, you would kind of think when you spend 5 years with someone that you might be able to mimic their accent a little bit, but I can't do anything other than my favourite northeast sayings, which is George Michael, for when it is warm. So you'd say, "Ee, it's George Michael in here," meaning, "Oh, it's very warm here." So we'll just end this little lesson with a couple of quickfire questions for Rachel May. So, Rachel, I'll set the scene. You've just stepped out of the car and Chris Hodgson's driving down. How do you greet him?
Harrison.
Oh, very good. If Chris was... Harrison, that was a bit more northeast. How would you do it as thick a Cumbrian accent as you possibly can?
Harrit Mara!
Which, of course, is the West Cumberland version of greeting for how's Fettel, how's it gan? Harrit Mara. Mara being your pal, your friend. The only thing you can make that sound more West Cumbrian would be to say, Harrit Mara, eh? And put an eh at the end of it as well. Mm. What is the Cumbrian word for small?
Lal.
Lal. What's the Cumbrian number for one?
Yan.
Two?
I don't know.
Tan.
Oh, I don't know.
Yan, tan, tethera, methera, pin.
Methera, is three, four.
Yeah. if Chris was to come down and you were to invite him out for a drink, what would you say?
Fancy a pint?
Horrid pal, fancy a pint? Well, I think you've done well. I am going to try for the next episode to get someone, a native speaker, on. Because I don't think Rachel would even attempt to say, "There's a guy now yonder to fin me sell a barry lal duken spot." You going to have a go?
What did you say? I was gone now yonder to find myself...
Find myself a barry lal duken spot.
A barry lal duken spot.
Not too bad. Not too bad. Congratulations. You've passed the test and you may receive a Cumberland sausage.
I hope that was a literal Cumberland sausage. We can't have Jacob Tonkin getting rude on this podcast. Wonderful job on I'll fin myself... a barry lal duken spot there, which means I'll go find myself a nice place to swim. Learning Cumbrian is coming along fantastically. Liam Bobbycard's story is fantastic, and you'll be so pleased to know, because you're clearly not getting enough of those two, I'll be recording an episode with them next week. Hold on, I've actually got Bobby on the line again.
Good morning, everybody. Turn the music down. So last summer I met this fella called Alexis. Nice fella. He's another waller from up in Scotland, Aberdeenshire. And when he heard that I moved house recently, very sweetly, he sent me like a sort of housewarming package. A few little bits and bobs in there, some sort of, you know, some local Aberdeenshire cakes and things like that. And in there was a little bag of chilies. And it just said on the side, China chilies. And I don't know if he grew them or just bought them for me. I have no idea. Anyway, I thought, oh, that's nice. Put them in the fridge. And last night, I was due to cheat on this podcast by appearing on another podcast, which is called Spud Life. There's a fella called Tatty Tim who in the centre of Penrith, he's got a food stand selling jacket potatoes, really good ones. And he also decided to start a podcast called Spud Life, just interviewing local people about whatever. And he says, oh, can I come on it and chat about stuff? I said, yeah, no problem. So I was about to head out to that, and I was in a bit of a rush. So I was just smashing down a bit of the dinner that Rose had lovingly made earlier, and almost with the last bite, I crunched into something, and my mouth was immediately on fire. It was the hottest thing I've had in my mouth since Jacob Tonkin's Cumberland sausage. And I was screaming through to Rose, I was like, what was that? She said, oh, sorry, it was one of the chilies. She'd put in some of these China chilies, not to eat, but just to sort of flavour it, and then we're going to pick them out, but she hadn't caught that one. So, yeah, I was there. At the time I was supposed to leave to go and record Spud Life, I was bent over the kitchen sink, topless, because, you know, I was getting a bit of a sweat on. I didn't want to sweat in the shirt I just put on. Down in about a litre of milk, and thinking that it was never going to end. So I was a little bit late heading up there, and a bit flustered, but I think it went well. Anyway, what a great episode last week, eh? The highlight for me was, hang on a mullet, which has got to be one of the best catchphrases that just slipped in there out of the genius mind of Mr. Baker without anyone really pulling him up on it. For those who don't know, Harry Holmes has a mullet, so yeah. And I can neither confirm nor deny that I used my contacts at SI Entries, my mate Jack, who works there, to subtly eliminate Harry's entry, because I just couldn't face being 43rd, you know what I mean? Like, 42nd's all right, but 43rd, it's just, couldn't really live with myself, so Harry had to go. Sorry about that. Yeah. Who eats Yorkies anymore? Or ever did? But anyway, let's address Nipplegate, or the segment I'd henceforth like to be known as Touching Tonkin, with apostrophe after the N on touching. Yeah, I did try and wax him after the race, but he had it coming, because before the race, I sort of stood around having a bit of a crack with them. Darren Fishwick of Keswick's. Darren Fishwick, he, lovely man, we have a bit of a natter now and again, and as I was doing that, a fella came up behind me and slapped me on the arse with such force that I can still feel the digits imprinted there right now, and we all know who that man was. So yeah, Tonk had it coming, that's what I'm saying about that. And finally this week, I don't really have anything to say about running, so finally this week, very exciting, it's the debut on the podcast. Rose has got, she's coming in with a bang. I was listening to the pod in the kitchen, and she had strong opinions in response to Andy Blackett's musings on what coats a jelly baby. Is it corn flour? Is it icing sugar? So I'll leave you this week with the expert opinion of chef extraordinaire and someone who's out to destroy my taste buds with chili peppers. It's Rose.
Icing sugar for sure.
There you have it. Finally, the jelly babies conundrum has been answered. Bobby's had some great feedback. And we've dropped in Spud Life a second time. So, I mean, I really hope you listen to Spud Life. It's time really to get on with Lad's Leap, isn't it? Right, I'm going to go straight into the results and then we'll have some race reports. So, first of all, you had to see the start of the women's race. Eve Pannone, she wanted to carry on like she'd started, and she absolutely ripped up that first climb through the field and was leading way, way out on the first climb. The results of the women's race, however, it was a different Eve that came in. I think that first climb killed Eve. Yep, there's a really crap killing Eve joke in there. It was Eve Whittaker, who I have been beaten by myself and written a song about it and got her name wrong. So Eve Whittaker of University of Leeds, an under 23 with incredible speed. She finished in a time of 51 minutes and 54 seconds, a whole minute 57 ahead of second place Nicola Jackson, and third place was Caroline Lambert. We'll do the top 10, as I've noticed these do all get a bit of a special mention when you do results. So Rose Mather of York Maidsmire was in fourth. Sarah Willoit of Mercia Fell Runners was in fifth. Catherine Taylor of Black Coombe was in sixth. Eve Pannone was in seventh from Ambleside. Lex Whittaker, Eve's sister, I think, was in eighth place. Lizzie Brown of Black Coombe Runners was in ninth. And 10th was Molly Brown of Wharfdale Harriers. In the women's under 23s, it won't surprise you that Eve Whittaker won that. Lex Whittaker was second and Betty Bergstrand was third. In the women's bet 40s, the podiums: Rachel Pilling of Pudsey and Bramley AC, Sue Richmond of Pennine Fell Runners, and Lou Osborne of Ambleside AC. In the 45s, first was Sue Richmond, second was Lou Osborne, and third was Dawn Burrows of, I think it's Sinn Féin, I don't think it's Sinn Féin Running Club. They're based out of Derby, and so far I haven't seen Gerry Adams in the results. Winner was Lou Osborne, second was Dawn Burrows of Sinn Féin Running Club, and third was Stella Chrysanthu of Calder Valley. Into the women's 55s, first was Elizabeth Batt of Dark Peak Fell Runners, second was Deborah Gowans of Todmorden, and third was Melanie Blackhurst of Todmorden. So a strong showing there for the Tods. And in the Vet 60s, Jane Croson of Dark Peak was first. Second was Karen Forster. And third was Becky White of Bingley Harriers. On to the category Vet 65. Becky White was first, and Dakin was second, and Wendy Dodds, who, there was this little bit at the bottom of the starting field where you sort of went over a path and zigzagged back on yourself, and most people, you know, they zigzagged on the track, but Wendy, ever the hardcore fell runner, she just took a straight line and went down some steep, rocky bit that no one else was doing, because everyone else was doing the track. So she's just showing how it's done there, Wendy. And in the Vet 70s, well, doesn't surprise you, Wendy Dodds won that category. And second was Jan Forrester of Belper Harriers. So on to the men. That race came next, and it was Jake Collier leading out the first climb. He did finish in the top 40. Full respect, just got to go for it sometimes, and I think he had a very good result up at Flower Scar. He's been running really well this year, and he does do an excellent soft mullet, so I thought a special mention, because I don't get to mention him in the top 10, but he did go at it hard. So first, a win, an English Fell Champs win. He's won an English Fell Champs before, but he was second in that race
to a slight legend from Scotland. So it's Daniel Howarth's first win at the champs for Matlock Athletic Club. And behind him was the adventures of Dr. Rothery, Ben Rothery of Ilkley Harriers, who may well be the best downhill runner in the UK. I'm throwing in England, I'll go England, I'm throwing that out. We all know that Ewan Paton is a force to be reckoned with after seeing his descending in Wales and his record on the mountain I can never remember the name of because I don't think I've been up it. Looks like a big pile of rocks. But yeah, Ben, if you see footage of the end of the race, Ben took some serious time on that last descent. Third behind him was Tim Lamont of Helm Hill. And fourth was Finlay Grant of Dark Peak, closely followed by Bertie Hooton of Dark Peak Fell Runners. Tom Wood, our surprise man at Flower Scar, was well up there again, so his surprise is gone. We know who you are, Tom. Sixth from Oxford University Cross Country Club. A massive team in UK fell running. Seventh was Tom Spencer of Buxton AC. Eighth was Martin Howard of Calder Valley. Ninth was the running elk, Matthew Elkington. And tenth was Jack Wright into the under-23s. He was presented to us all at the start of the race as he was so loved by Des Gibbons. It was Finlay Grant. Second was Tom Spencer. And third was Kinog Williams of Dark Peak Fell Runners. They turn out some good runners at Buxton. That's where Finlay started out. The male vet 40s. Rob Hope was the winner. Matt Roberts was in second. And Steve Jacques of Ambleside Athletic Club. Sorry, Rob Hope is a Pudsey in Bramley. Math is from Calder Valley. And Steve Jacques is from Ambleside. Representing Rob Hope, he was winning the men's for 45s. Steve Jacques was second. And Adam Osborne of Calder Valley was third. Into the men's 50s, Sean Godsman of Calder Valley, Ian Holmes of Bingley Harriers and Gavin Mulholland of Calder Valley. The first male 55 was Ian Holmes. The second male 55 was David Birch of Keswick AC. And the third male 55 was John Hunt of Dark Peak Fell Runners. Dave Prosser of Keswick AC took the men's 60th cat category. He didn't steal a 60 cat. Paul Cornforth was second from Ambleside AC, and Steve Rhodes at the Northern Fell Running Club was third. In the 65s, Bob Foreman of Matlock AC was out in front taking first. Met Bob, he's a great chap. Mervyn Keyes of Rosendale Harriers was in second, and Chris Spate of Helm Hill Runners, he's having a great spate right now, in third. Brian Thompson of Helm Hill Runners, he was first. Love saying this. In second was Mick Morehouse of Matlock Athletic Club, and in third was Paul Morris of Keswick AC. Into the male 75s was Ken Jones of Dark Peak Fell Runners, who just must be some kind of bona fide legend. And that rounds up the results. Nice one, Ken. And nice one, everybody else who I read out. And nice one, anybody who turned up. Nice one to those of you who didn't have the best flower scar that you wanted but didn't pull out of the race. yeah, just going to pick on that anonymous person. And yeah, it was good, wasn't it? So rather than me say amazing punditry, like it was good, wasn't it? Let's hear some race reports.
Hiya, Charles. Daniel here. Live from the hustle and bustle of breakfast in Sanatoria de Luca, which is like a monastery kind of thing in Mallorca, where myself and Abigail are just debriefing about the weekend. Abby's just loading up on food. I've also done the same. Eggs, pineapple, melon, banana, bread, yogurt. So just a few of the things I can see on the table. Oh, what's got here? What's this one? Some little kind of pastry. I'm just going to dip in my coffee. Ooh. Ooh.
Apricot.
I'm just going to listen to see if you can hear what I'm saying.
If you're still listening to this podcast right now and you're thinking, why didn't he just edit that bit out and get on to the bits about fell running? I just want to apologise because it's kind of not what I'm here for. I could edit that, but Dan going, apricots. I like that.
I'm just having a minute away from Abby because she keeps interrupting my voice notes. Lads Leap. Yeah, I was delighted to take the win. How did it unfold? Everyone went off really hard up that field. And you know when you're just thinking, like, why is everyone going so fast? Jake Collier. Flashing the pan on the climb. No offence, Jake, joking. Yeah, it went out pretty fast. But, like, so fast that you're like, this isn't sustainable. Sat in on the climb, and then I think the bit where we got the move was coming up to the stile near the top of the climb. I was probably in like six. And then I thought, oh no, everyone's going to get stuck at the stile. So I put in a spurt to get to the stile first. And then just picking up the pace, I was like, oh, I feel all right. So I went over the stile, I was like, I may as well keep going. And I kept pushing. I could hear that I was getting a gap. I was like, right, this is it. I'm going to have to keep moving now. So yeah, tried not to turn around, blah, blah, blah. Managed to jump the fence on the way down to the trod, which was fun. And then on the really boggy bit, just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. And it was very muddy. Kept falling over and like coming to a complete stop and looking around going, oh no, they're going to be right behind. Actually, no, I don't think I did look around. Just was thinking, oh shit, they're going to be catching up. But yeah, quite hard to stop and start again, like completely stop and then get back up to full pace again. Then did the descent bit and then got to the guy at the fence at the far end. I was like, hurry, are they near me? How close are they? How close are they? And they're like, yeah, well done, well done. Like, no, how close are they? I was like, oh, they're not even coming down the hill yet. Which I'm not sure if that's true or not, but I was like, oh, wicked, I've got a gap. And that's quite a nice climb all the way back up. But yeah, was cautious of not going too hard on the climb because didn't really want to blow up. So just tried to ride the line, really. And then got onto the muddy bit on the top bit of the climb, and that was just, yeah, really hard again because you're just slopping all over the place. And then, yeah, just won, which is good. And yeah, great event by Des Gibbons, legend of the fell running scene. Yeah, good to see everyone out there. And yeah, the champs is wide open now, I guess. So that's good.
Thank you, Dan. Lovely report and well ran.
So I'm just walking around the memorial for Il Monte Olive Concito Redemptor Orans Porcidi Morete Pardensi Devsit Sudore Manana Sanguines. And you'll never guess who I bumped into. It's the winner of the Sheffield Half Marathon, Abigail Pearce. A couple of words.
No.
Do it.
I'm too full, I've had too much.
Okay, I'll turn it off. So how, just out of curiosity, how was the race for you on Sunday? You wanna say something? Oh, she's shiny. I'll tell you what she's been saying all week.
She said the publicity's
gone to her head. She said it wasn't even hard, everyone was just shit and slower than me. And what else is the other thing you said?
The crowds
were
shit.
The crowd, don't say that. That'd be nice.
Shut up!
This is recording.
You've been lying, and now it looks like I'm a bad guy.
No, I'll speak on behalf of her. She's really grateful for all the support. She's an incredible woman. It's amazing that a woman can even run a half marathon, let alone win one. So, well done. She's Sheffield born and bred. So she's really proud to win the home city marathon, half marathon. And yeah, it's really nice of her to earn a bit of money to spend on us on holiday. We did actually miss our flight on the way here. So
that's another story.
But we got debunked off the, not debunked, derobed? No. De-immigrated. I can't bother to, sorry. But yeah, DM me.
You can put whatever you want into your podcast, Charlie. I'm not easily offended. Flight story. We arrived with plenty of time at the airport. We then moved forward to the gate. We then sat at the gate waiting for the last people to go through because we needed to rest our weary legs. And then quite last minute, there was probably like three people still in the queue going through the gate. Dan went, oh, I'll just go for one last wee. So he went for a wee and I was thinking, oh, right, the queue's nearly gone now. Dan gets back from a wee just as the queue kind of, the last person is literally going through the gate. The door shuts. We then walk up to the gate. We were probably about 5 meters away from it at this point. And these Ryanair staff were like, no, you've missed your flight. And we were like, no, we haven't. Just open that door. And they were like, no. They wouldn't let us through. So the door to the gate, it wasn't the door to the aeroplane. This was the door to go like through to the next section when after you're at the gate, you know, to that corridor bit. So they just wouldn't let us through. So I start crying. And then we got taken to we asked to speak to a manager and we got proceeded to tell us that Dan had smell of alcohol. He hadn't had a drink. And that he shouldn't talk to his wife in the she said, would you talk to your wife in this way? He wasn't even talking to her in any way. He was just a bit upset we'd just missed our flight. Anyway, while all this is going on, our flight is obviously still there because it takes like half an hour to take off. So it's all totally ridiculous. And then we got, derobed out of the airport. I mean, degloved out of the airport. And we had to have a day in rainy Manchester instead of Mallorca. How outrageous is that? That happened. And then I'll send you the headline that the Sheffield Star is going to publish about us, which Sarah Pritchard and Harriet Higby wrote out for us.
That's interesting. I don't know if it's derobed or degloved. I would have thought derobed is undressed, so I doubt the manager of Ryanair undressed them. But please don't look degloved up as well, because degloving injuries, they're really not nice things. I can't remember, some guy at work showed me a degloving injury and I'm not great with blood and guts and degloving injuries, they're not great if you don't like disgusting things. So don't investigate de-rubbing or de-rubbing, degloving or de-robing, you know, if you don't already know what they are. If you do, I bet Daniel's up to stuff. The headlines. Here are the headlines. Thug music teacher from Matlock in the cells after altercation with Ryanair staff. Sheffield running legends branded drunk and aggressive for resting their weary legs and denied boarding. I mean, they're quite kind headlines. I think man takes we and Mrs. Flight. Yeah. Says so you need to know, really. I guess you wouldn't read the article after that, would you? Hello, Harry. Despite the delays this week, the Lads Leap review will be on its way. I just wondered if, first of all, I must ask you a question. Will you be responding to any cruel claims of not running the flagged route? I wonder how you feel about this. What your stance is, perhaps, on whether you run along the line of all the flags or whether you may dart between them like a true fell runner with no regard for land permissions. Yes, that's what you call a rather loaded question. Peace, love, and dodgy haircuts.
Hi, Charlie. There were some comments during the race, actually, and after, about me not following the flagged route as closely as other people claim to. Although I would argue that, like everybody else in the race, I didn't follow the flagged routes. Like, I don't think anyone followed the exact flag route on the way back to on the way, you know, off the tracked climb, because the flags were in the bog and everyone wanted to run the nice dry bit. And there were other sections where I was slightly more wayward than most runners because like in any fell race, you use a little bit of local knowledge, and like Des was saying in the race preview, that, you know, you can, you know, use local knowledge, keep your feet dry. And I went through some very, very nice dry bits on my little wayward adventures. And they just happened to also be slightly quicker than where everyone else went. Although I was extremely slow on the day, so it all kind of evened itself out, I think. But yeah, it's partially marked, not a cross-country race, so we have to run between two lines of tape the entire way. So don't think I did anything wrong, to be honest, yeah. Hi, Charlie. I thought I'd give you some more place name translations from this weekend's fell races. So we've got Llangollen Fell Race on Sunday, which is a Welsh name, surprisingly enough. It's in Wales. And that means the Church of St. Gollan. And also on Sunday, in the Peak District, we have Worksworth Incline Fell Race, which I'm planning on doing myself. So Worksworth is an old English name, which comes from the element a personal name called work, and worth meaning an enclosure. So Worksworth. But that's kind of not much else on this weekend that I can easily translate for you.
Thank you, Harold. Lovely to have you drop by. Well done on completing your SI entries correctly to be at Lads Leap. It was great to see you.
Charles, Mr. Clark here. Just wanted to give you my Lads Leap race review. So, having wrecked it a few weeks earlier, I was pretty excited. It was quite dry then. I thought, ooh, once I get my ass kicked on that first climb, might suit me, this. Then had the dilemma of we had family over and their flight back clashed, family over from Lithuania, because my partner's Lithuanian, their flight back clashed with, well, their drop-off clashed with Lad's Leap, so procrastination begun. 2.5 weeks later, I decided that due to the way family treat me in Lithuania, like I am the King of England and I get paraded around family to family, and everybody in Lithuania cannot do enough, all the family cannot do enough for me over there. So I decided that I had to make a pretty easy decision, really, that it was take the family to the airport and miss Lad's Leap. So what happened? Well, I've got a hire van at work, which is a welfare van. It's got a canteen in the back and a toilet, so it's gigantic. It was very windy that day, don't remember. So I went down, I got the van, I reversed it as close to our house as possible to make it easier for the family. I need to backtrack, actually. So the procrastination was ongoing, and then we phoned Dave, the local taxi man, and he quoted us £100 to take the family to the airport. So that made the decision a lot easier. So I'd reverse the van up, make it easier. Fam don't have to walk as far with bag because you can't park outside our house. It was a nice day, windy. We set off, traffic was pretty clear, sun was in my eyes a little bit going down through Todd. There's also a little bit of a build up around the market, the hub. Continued through Littleborough, past Lakeside Living, that was pretty busy as per. And then we dropped onto the M62, and this is where the magic kind of happened, because this welfare van is like driving a Boeing 747. Oh my God, it was rocking, it was blowing, it was side to side. And then this van, because it's pretty new, it's got like a weird wind assist. So when it gusts stronger than, I don't know, I've not got an official windometer gauge on the van, but it slams itself on, which created kind of like a white knuckle ride for me, Liggy, to the dog and the family in the back who were, I think a little bit confused by my random braking, but it wasn't me. Anyway, we carried on. We got to Liverpool Airport. I had to pay £10 for 10, literally 10 minutes probably for drop off. Went to the departures, all the hugs, kisses, miss you, thank you, see you soon in Lithuania. Then we went to Greg's, had a cheeky Greg's, which made me feel like shit. And then the return trip began. I managed to get out of the car park a little bit easier this time, seeing as I have got the biggest van in the world. And then it began, the journey home. And I do have to say that I have no regrets over not doing Lad's Leap. Family is more important. And having heard how boggy it was, probably not a bad thing. Congrats to Mr. Howarth, Tim LaMontagne, Dr. Rothery, wasn't it? Then Tim LaMontagne. And congrats to the wizard from Leeds University, under 23, Eve something, who won the ladies. Nick Jackson in second. So congrats to them. And yeah, I've heard mixed reports of how the day and the race went.
So just in case you thought we need to spend more time on Donny Not Racing, this is Donny's driving report in the style of his race reporting. Drove slow, slow, shaky, rattling, Lithuanians in the back, passed by a Volvo, drove past airport to airport. Flight, bye, sad, missed race. Conscience clear, I'm a good fellow, King of England.
Chicken, ham, ketchup and mayo. I've packed my lunchbox, what's in yours? Tell me what you like or don't like when you're munching on the moors.
Hi Charlie, it's Will for Bite-Sized Munching on the Moors. Mainly on a short run today because it's a short run and my calf stroke foot things kind of I think if I just do stuff about 10-15 miles long and build on that, that might help. Who knows? Anyway, it's a bit of a pisser. So, I had a late start today. I've just had a gel, and I thought there's a lot of talk about gels and all the different compounds and stuff. I've done a modicum amount of research on some gels which people make very big claims about, and looking at the back of those compared to High Fives and others, they all seem to be just about maltodextrin. I expect there's probably some element of truth about mixing up fructose and your glucose, but at the end of the day, it's just sugar, isn't it? Put it on a t-shirt. So I've had a cyst gel because they're always readily available. They always seem to be available in shops like Tesco as well as sports shops. They're often on a deal, like £7 for £6 or something. Is that right? Yeah. Rather than £6 for £7 or £2 for the price of £1. Is that right? Oh, I don't know. Too much pre-training. So that's that. I think gels are absolutely fine. My dog runs with me on just regular dog biscuits, and she's way fitter than me, or faster for sure. So I think, I tried these ones made by a certain company, they're ginger flavor, and they just give me gut rot more so than any other gel. So if that works for you, fine, but always play around. I think the main problem is when you just have nothing but gels, and that can be a bit much, but I think that's for races only. And also, I found liquid sports drinks. They're quite good. They seem to have fallen out of favour, haven't they? It's all gels. But I think drinks can be good as well. Anyway, I hope to have a bigger meal for your consumption, hopefully next week. I know I keep promising it, but it's all about timing, mate. And it might be worth it. Anyway, see you later. Love to all our listeners. Bye.
Will Boothman has spoketh on gels, and yeah, drinks, that's true. I do like the little powdered drinks. I was listening to Finlay Wilde talking about his Bob. I think he was into the powdered drinks too, so it's good enough for the wild man and good enough for Will Boothman. Like there are plenty of things to eat out there on the hills. And that's what that segment is all about. And Will, is he going to try dog biscuits? That's what I'm. Was that the little hint he was giving us there?
Hello, my name is Christopher Goldie, and I'm responsible for the Stud Marks podcast, which is essentially a potted history of the Walsh PB fell shoe. Podcast sort of came about because of my love / obsession with the shoe and its place in fell running history. That it's a unique shoe and it had a huge impact on the sport, but also for me as not a particularly great runner, it sort of connects me with those iconic runners that you see in old copies of the fell runner, you know, all the big names, you know, Billy, all the Blands, you know, Josh Naylor, obviously to name a few. So I decided I wanted to document the history of the shoe, and so John Crompton, the owner of Walsh, kindly allowed me to come visit the factory in Bolton, where we had a chat about obviously fell running, the PB range, how that fits in the wider context of the business, how the fashion casual line has obviously helped them through any kind of difficult periods, and how they've kind of, you know, that casual fashion line has been really has allowed them to, you know, like diversify and work with other brands, and how the export market has been, you know, the fact that it's made in Britain obviously carries a lot of weight, and so they are, you know, big in the export market. The Big in Japan, which is a reference that dates me. So yeah, so the podcast came about because I wanted to document it, and then just on the wider context, I just thought, oh well, it'd be really interesting to maybe speak to some other sort of runners. And I'm very lucky in a future episode that I did get to go and speak to Josh Naylor. Many thanks to Pete Todd Hunter for arranging that, and obviously spoke to Finley Wild, who wore Walsh's for quite a lot of those Ben wins and in his wider running as well. And also, when I was looking at the history, you couldn't kind of, you know, I couldn't do a podcast about fell running history without speaking to Steve Chilton, which is in the, hopefully in the next episode. Richard Asquith, who wrote Feet in the Clouds, which is obviously really opened up fell running to sort of, well, the wider world, essentially. So it's really interesting to hear his thoughts on where fell running is at the moment. So this is my little podcast. I did a little bonus episode which came out the other week, which was with the terrific runner Harry Bolton, and how he designed two fell shoes, well, a fell and a trail shoe for Ron Hill. And the reason I included that is because, well, he's a fantastic fell runner who was making shoes for the fell running community, you know, not just a trail shoe that has slightly more aggressive grip. And obviously Ron Hill being a really iconic, you know, again, another British brand in running. And so it sort of made sense that that kind of slotted into the history of a shoe manufacturer and fell running. So this has been a bit of an ongoing project. And I'm hoping to have some more episodes out in the next kind of few weeks. So I really do hope that you enjoy these episodes. I know they're fairly niche. I know that Walsh's aren't perfect for everyone's feet, but it's undeniable that they are an important part of fell running. And I just think it's brilliant that John continues to make these shoes with quite a small margin to support the fell running community. And this is my kind of thanks and, you know, return to that gesture. So look out for more episodes. You can find me on kind of social media, which is Instagram and Facebook, for Stud Marks Podcast. And if you yourself have any interesting stories around, you know, Walsh PBs, please do get in touch. There's hopefully going to be an episode in the future with all these anecdotes from runners of all abilities, all backgrounds. You know, I wore them as a kid, I wore them on my Bob Graham, that kind of thing. I hope you enjoy it, and thanks so much for listening if you have done. And thanks, more importantly, to Charlie for approaching me to talk about my rather niche podcast. So, cheers.
So, the weekly totals, there was a total of 9 hours and 34 minutes of running, covering 49 miles, 12,000 feet, and in metres, it was something around 4,000, I think. It started on started on Monday. Got a lovely night's sleep in the van. It was bank holiday Monday, wasn't it? Feels an age away now. And I stopped off on my way home to meet Josh Williams and his new son Sid Vicious, and some cracking beans on toast was shared. That was a good conversation, and I was thinking, I wonder how today's running is going to go after my big weekend. And it was an absolute stunner. The Peak District, the sun was shining, I was running over Brown Knoll, I was listening to the Beatles, I was very, very happy. And I also went up South Head, which is one of my favourite little peaks. I always love the views you get up there. Bit of hands-on knees climbing and a fun descent. So really chuffed with that because the legs felt good after a big couple of days. And they felt a bit stiff first thing in the morning, but had given it good time until the afternoon. I love running in the morning. Sometimes wait until the afternoon, you can wait until your body feels a little bit better. Tuesday was still part of Coach Cartwright's smart recovery in, you know, big weekends, little weeks. So he had me working on the treadmill, pointing it to the ceiling, and it was an uphill treadmill session. Felt good on that. There was, let me look what I did there, because I mean, I know you love to know. It was a nice 20 minute warm up, Then there was 5 minutes at threshold with a walk recovery, 5 minutes again, walk recovery, 10 minutes, walk recovery, 5 minutes, walk recovery, 5 minutes. They're all at threshold, but my heart rate monitor has gone on its holidays down to Devon. Emma accidentally took it home, and that meant I was going more off feel. So I went on the easier side of things and gradually pushed the pace up onto the last rep. And it was lovely to do a session where my speeds got progressively faster, not progressively slower. I did the gym that night. It was the same gym I do every week, so I won't bore you. The only thing I did differently was I did some step-ups with a dumbbell and pressed it above my head. On to Wednesday. Nice early start. Had some patience, doing some work still. Just like to let you know that I haven't gone full-time athlete, absolute full-time bum too. Got out for a nice little easy run up and down the Monsell Trail, waved at some bloke who I thought was Harry Holmes, and it turned out to be somebody else who has a moustache and a mullet. Hang on, a mullet? That's not Harry Holmes. So, it was a good day. I made it a double by going out with the cafe group. So the cafe I work at, they do a Wednesday night run. And I got back and I had fish and chips for tea. And what's lovely about having your own practice room is that you can put your feet up on your bed at the end of the day and watch a bit of telly in your room. What a life. So fish, chips, curry sauce, and then mushy peas to get the vegetables in and feel healthy. I think I also went overboard and had a sausage. On to Thursday. Bit of a slow start to the day. I was tired because Skip, the dog, has taken to coming in the morning at about 4 and jumping on my bed and saying hello. I don't know what his game is. I don't know what he's after. But isn't it lovely to have a dog friend? So yeah, I had a great run. I drove to Hope, and I ran up Luce Hill, over to Mamtor, dropped down to Edel, ran back up Hollins Cross, back up to Luce Hill and back down. Some very muddy mud in the Peak District this week, and still up this week of recording, very wet underfoot, slippy. Interestingly, I do feel like I've been improving at descending. Now, it was interesting, I got passed by Ian Holmes in a race, and I saw some great footage of Chris Richards last year at the Snowdon race, running downhill, and his feet were turning over at some ridiculous rate. And I think, you know, the great thing about running off-road, I think, in terms of looking after your bodies, you can really mix things up. So if you've got big, powerful quads, like I'd imagine a Jacob Tonkin of the descending world, then, you know, you're going to want to lengthen that stride out sometimes and let those muscles take some of the heat, and stride out, make the most of your long stride and enjoy it. And I found that, you know, being a lanky git myself, I found that can work quite well for me. But when it comes to steeper stuff, because I'm sort of, you know, a slower, longer runner, I think that speeding up my footwork on the steeper stuff has actually been good for me. And as someone who's had on and off knee pain for a little while, I do think it's actually helping with that too. So it's things that you can experiment when you're out there. But slightly quicker feet on the downhills. And yeah, as I watched Ian Holmes dance past me on Saturday, which I'll come to later, it seemed to work for him too. And I think he's done all right over his career. So yeah, technique isn't everything, but it's definitely something you can think about when you're out running. And that's just something I've noticed by observing some of the best and possibly critiquing my own. Had a busy day, lots of patience, that's nice. On the way after the run, I managed to grab a bacon, egg, sausage and tomato sandwich. Delicious. That's enough you need to know about my food. There is mention in my diary about me being addicted to a BBC drama, and it's affected how early I've been getting to bed. So the telly is dangerous. We spoke about how I wasn't watching too much, but yeah, sometimes I will binge, and I'm such a busy man, it's, you know, not the greatest. But Friday was an easy day. I had a 50-minute run, a few strides. That was, again, lovely. I'm generally feeling, you know, much better than I was in January. I'm really enjoying my running. And it's just been nice because I've been getting the miles in and been feeling good. And then I want to watch June 2 at the cinema to make it a bit of a relaxing day. Would have been relaxing, except I managed to pay for the wrong car park on a parking app and I'm expecting a ticket. On to Lad's Leap. I fired this one off to Chris Albrough from the bathtub. So apologies for any imagery this conjures or any offence caused. But I thought it was nice to stick in an honest on the day race report. It also means you get a bit of your favoured ASMR. The Lad's Leap race report from the bathtub. For those of you who don't want to imagine me naked, I'm sorry, as I did in the bath. I'm wearing a wetsuit and a shower cap, and I'm in the middle of a rice pudding. But I've paused to just gather my thoughts. So, what a great day I had on the hills, must say. It was muddy, like flower scar. Apparently the mud caused issues for parking. Well, you know, that's just, you're going to go to some remote places, I guess, aren't you, to run a good fell race. So, yeah, a bit of a shame, isn't it, but I wasn't affected, so couldn't give two hoots. On to the race, amazing watching the women's race go off. Eve Whittaker, named correctly today, came home with a bit of a resounding win, followed by Nicola Jackson, who is consistency there, isn't she? Second again, getting those points on the table. So that was brilliant to watch, the women's race. I do love the separate races. Bit tough on the last three women, who, yeah, I think that must have been terrifying, having the whole men's field run at them. I hope the lady enjoyed being cheered, who finished before the men's race started. She got a bit of an applause there, which was well deserved. So, great first climb. It was funny starting the race because we were all pointing up the hill and then we were going around the flags. So that was a bit of a chaotic one. And great first climb. At one point I passed Ian Holmes and in my head I thought, don't pass Ian Holmes. But that early level, early race excitement took me past him. It was hard over the top, wasn't it? Great wind that was sometimes taking you by surprise and you were correcting for it and then it would stop and you'd fall over to one side. Absolutely brilliant. I found that hard over the top and I realised that I was pushing and enjoying it and right on the tail of some people. And as I descended, Ian Holmes came dancing past me through the tussocks, and it was a privilege to witness that. That was brilliant. Then overtook me, as did Jake Lane of Totley AC. He came whipping past me into the coveted second Totley position. I gave him a friendly push, which was the start of my bad behaviour, really, towards my friends. I definitely dropped anchor. I could see the gorgeous pink shorts of Bobby Guard-Story dropping anchor where I had. And then beyond that, where did we go? Then I got overtaken by series organiser Nick Barber. And he
This was a point where I was struggling, so basically I just said to myself, don't walk, Baker. And I kept running up this little hill, and I think Nick was hiking behind me and gaining, because I think he touched my hand at the gate, which, is that a psychological move? I don't know. But yeah, it wasn't long before he passed me over the top with his bandana glistening in the sun, looking ever the Rambo or whoever he was impersonating. And he went off chasing people down over that last bit. So Barbara and Fine Fettle. And I looked back, I thought, you know, after crossing Lad's Leap the second time, I wondered actually if I'd been, you know, slowly losing a few places, would Bart Shaw be coming back behind me? Would Rob Greenwood? And I saw them duking it out together, and the sight was so inspiring it made me stop and shout at them and flick the V's at them, but I'm not sure if they saw it, so I thought, shit, if I've just flipped the V at them, I can't get overtaken. So I put in a bit of an effort, and then I heard at the stile just before the end, I heard people shouting, go on, Rob. And I turned around and just wanted him to know that I meant business. So I gave him the finger, carried on running down the hill, and he overtook me. And then we went round the bend, and the last hill stung him in the tail, and I stung his tail and went past him, and then got onto the final track, and I just gave a little glance, and I could see a green vest gaining, a tall man in a green vest with blue shorts, and I thought, oh God, Bart is going to get me right at the last second. And just as someone shouted, go on, Eden, I was like, thank fuck. And I was very tired by this point, so I just cruised across the line and let some nice chap from Eden Runners take my win. So, absolutely brilliant time. I've got mud all over my head, and I need to get back to my rice pudding.
So, I think it's brilliant, because Billy's advice for Lad's Leap was get a nice warm-up in, which I didn't really do properly. I wish I need to read these things before I do the race. I think race day, we're going to work on that. Get up onto the hill on the warm-up to get a little bit of climbing in. I did that. Tootled the descent to save the quads. I wonder if he means that during the race, maybe. Push the climbs hard in the race, keep the flats and the descents under control. So yeah, I tootled it in the warm-up. Keep the flats and the descents under control. I think with Rob Greenwood breathing down my neck, did I keep that descent under control? Probably did. The flats I didn't. It was just running as hard as you could across a bog, wasn't it? So, brilliant. That meant that I was actually a little bit baked on Sunday, a bit tired. So I had a nice restful day. And then come the evening, I got on the treadmill for a little bit of a walk up the hill, and that rounded off a great week. So hopefully it's not been too much. That's the champs now for me until the bog. You guys will be doing Pendle Cloughs, and I think it's been great fun to do two champ races in the build up to the Bob Graham. I've got plenty of recce's in. I'm heading out for one today, a day of recording. And yeah, fingers crossed we've played it right. And, you know, it's been fun to race the champs, get some points for Totley, who finished in the top 10 team overall. So loving that. Tetley AC up there with the creme de la creme of the fell running world. And yeah, I've obviously destroyed their chances at Pendle Clough by getting all of them to pace me. But we'll be back at the other races, flying the green flag. And I hope, depending on how the bob goes and how I recover, that I can be there too.
That was the podcast. We talked about running. We talked about other things too. Thank you for joining. We hope you enjoyed it. That was On the Back Foot.
Now, my last cover was so fantastic, I sent it to my brothers. My brother, I only have one, and he's got a master's degree in music performance. And he said that I need to project my voice a little more. So, good luck, team. This is to the winners of a tribute to the winner of the men's race. It's a little song by Elton John. Daniel is travelling tonight on a plane. I can see the red tail lights heading for Spain. Oh, and I can see Daniel waving goodbye. Oh, he looks like Daniel. Must be the clouds in my eyes. They say Spain is pretty, but I've never been. Well, Daniel says it's the best place he's ever seen. Oh, and he should know he's been there before. Lord, I miss Daniel. Oh, I miss him so much. Oh, Daniel, my brother, you are older than me. Do you still feel the pain of the scars that won't heal? Your eyes have died, but you see more than I. Daniel, you're a star in the face of the sky. Oh, Daniel, my brother, you are older than me. Do you still feel the pain of the scars that won't heal? Your eyes have died, but you see more than I. Daniel, you're a star in the face of the sky. Daniel is traveling tonight on Ryanair. He can see the red tail lights heading for Spain. Oh, and if only he hadn't gone for a piss. God, it looks like Daniel. Must be the clouds in Manchester. God, it looks like Daniel. Good job, he's a great guy.